this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. Welcome to episode 58. This week we have the wonderful, lovely Sam White sharing her story of her postpartum adventures, her struggles with postpartum depression, which eventually led to a diagnosis of bipolar disorder. A lot of you who've been listening to the show for a while now probably are used to me rambling and doing really long talking intros, but this week I have a cold, maybe you can hear it. I'm really congested, and now that I've finally at the it's President's Day here, and it's the end of the day, and the kids really went very willingly to bed, and now that I finally have a chance to like stand with the microphone, I feel like a sneezing attack coming on. So rather than me rambling about life, the universe, and everything, I'm just gonna turn it over to Sam White. Take it away, Sam. Hi Sam, thanks for being on the show today.
Hey, Courtney, thanks for having me.
So I understand that we should jump into your pregnancy to start your story, because you had a really easy, chill pregnancy, didn't you?
Oh, easy and chill are definitely the words I would use. No, I got my positive pregnancy test, and I started getting sick, I think, the next day. And I stayed sick for 37 weeks until my son was born. I was throwing up probably 5 to 6 times a day. My throat was bleeding. I ended up losing like 40 pounds while I was pregnant because I was so sick. I couldn't keep anything down. Even my favorite foods didn't sound good. I basically survived on McMuffins and bean burritos from Taco Bell.
That actually sounds like really appetizing, because I had to eat the fiber, but I understand how that's awful. We all like hear someone else's awfulness, or like, wait, I could have done that, even though it's like, no, I would have like gone crazy after 2 days of bean burritos.
Yeah, well, it was funny because, you know, when you're pregnant, like everything is, you have to eat this way and do these things. And my doctor was finally just like, calories. You just need calories. I don't even care what they're from. Just eat calories. You have to eat something. So I took that advice to heart and I did that.
Okay, so were there any other issues during your pregnancy other than, you know, not that nausea is not a big enough problem, but were you able to stay at home? Did you get hospitalized during this?
I was able to avoid hospitalization narrowly on a couple of occasions, but I did not. I actually worked full time while I was pregnant, and thankfully my job at the time had like a nap room, which I used liberally. And I also developed high blood pressure, which ended up resulting in an induction.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Induction. Oh, I'm so glad I didn't have to do that. So how did induction work? Was it, I hear it's really easy to be induced.
Yeah. Oh, it was a breeze. No, it was, you know, ultimately I wouldn't change anything about my birth. It was 36 hours of long labor that resulted in an amazing, perfect delivery. I don't really know. I really credit, like the nursing staff and the physicians there for listening to me, because they kind of let me be in control of how things went. And I would have preferred a long labor that I was happy with. Although I would have been fine, I think, either way.
Wow. That is so nice. I've almost never heard that. Like, oh my gosh, the nursing staff and physicians were great. It's usually, you know, you hear the opposite problem.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my doctor is one of the most amazing people on the planet. I really respect her a lot. She, you know, I'm a little bit overweight, and so I constantly just had this fear when I got pregnant that my doctor was just going to be like, you're fat, and that means you're going to have all these problems. And she didn't badger me at all. She always, you know, like I didn't feel like she ever held that against me, and she was just really collaborative and listened, and I really respect her, and she was great, and the whole nursing staff was great, so I don't have any complaints.
Did you, I was nauseous almost my entire pregnancy with Pippa, and then definitely the entire pregnancy with Julian. Still managed to gain 65 pounds with Pippa, and I think 55 with Julian. Did you manage to gain weight, or were you?
No, I didn't gain any weight. I, you know, it's funny because a lot of people congratulated me for my weight loss because I looked visibly ill when I was pregnant. I mean, it was not fun for me. But when I walked out of the hospital, I think I weighed 30 or 40 pounds less than when I got pregnant because I just was so sick. I mean, it was just, I was eating maybe 700 calories a day on a good day. I mean, I just couldn't keep anything down. So I guess the redeeming thing about that is the baby will take whatever it needs from you, and then you just get whatever's left.
Right, right. The baby. So you gave birth to a healthy baby?
Yes, I gave birth to a 37-week, 8-pound, 5-ounce baby boy.
And how and where did things go from there? So tough pregnancy, but a good birth, good delivery. How are you feeling after that? What brings you to the show?
So I kind of, as I look back on it, I think things sort of kicked off immediately after he was born. I in the hospital, I didn't sleep. I didn't sleep obviously when I was being induced because I was having contractions and they're monitoring your blood pressure and the baby and all of those things. But then, even after he was born, I couldn't sleep. I was just awake even when he was sleeping. And, you know, brand new babies being born is like exhausting. So he slept just constantly. And I couldn't sleep. And that continued when I went home. I would just lay awake. He would sleep, you know, for 3 or 4 hours at a time, whatever your newborn generously gives you. And I just was on all the time. And everything else kind of, I think, was probably predicated on that. It kind of just crept in slowly. And then all of a sudden, one day I was like, wow, this is not good. You're not in a good place.
Mm. So when you say you couldn't sleep, how was that for you? Was it like you wanted to sleep and you just couldn't shut your brain down? Or like, were you wired and you just like didn't even feel tired?
I felt tired and wired at the same time. It was really weird. Like I physically felt exhausted, but when I laid down, my brain was I couldn't stop. I just couldn't turn it off. You know, I lay there and
hang on, Sam. I'm losing you right now. Did you change your phone position?
No.
Oh no! Now you're back.
Okay.
Sometimes I just have to like reprimand the phone gods, and it all's better.
That's totally. AT&T doesn't do so hot around here, so I'm trying to stay in one spot.
Yeah. Okay, so you were saying you felt tired and wired at the same time.
Yeah, and I would lay down and I just couldn't sleep. Like my brain just would run through every possibly bad scenario that could happen to me or the baby or really just anybody that I could think of. And that sort of snowballed and I think really the lack of sleep I think probably really kind of kicked things off.
Right. So how long did things go on before I assume you got help because you sound like a woman who has slept. So I assume you got help at some point.
Yeah, I did. So this part of my story gets a little bit dark. So when Harlan was about 5 weeks old, I actually had a plan that I was going to kill myself. Mm. And I remember, so I know Baby Center kind of gets a bad reputation, but I had made kind of some like internet friends on Baby Center. And I remember posting in our group being like, you guys, I can't do this. Like I can't do this anymore. And one of my friends said, you need to call your doctor's office right now. And so I did. And I really don't know where I would be without that encouragement and that kind of push in that direction.
Oh, I'm feeling chills.
Yeah, you know, it's easier to talk. It gets easier to talk about with time, but it's definitely a hard thing to talk about still.
Oh, it's not one of those things that you get to talk about once. And I mean, I remember I talked about it one time, like my worst parts. I talked about it once with my psychologist and I thought I'm done. Like that, like how much more can I possibly have to talk about this? I don't want to keep reliving it. But every time you talk about it, it's like some different part of the pain is released.
You know, I agree. And that's why I kind of tell people when they're like, well, why, you know, like, how did you decide to talk about it? And it's because I don't think there's any other way for me to redeem that time in my life and that part of my journey. Like, I think that that's what I am meant to do. And if that means I have to tell this story 100 times and relive different pieces of it every time, I'm going to do that.
Oh my gosh, that is, you're just speaking what I haven't been able to articulate. Thank you.
I mean, it's just the truth for me. I was telling a friend recently that I think it's my life's work. Like, so it will always be a part of me and what I do going forward, because I think it's really important. And I think that so many new parents suffer alone and for no reason, because so many people can relate to what that feeling is and what, you know, we went through. And I just don't think there's any need for anybody to suffer alone or quietly or any of that.
Amen. All right. So 5 weeks, it was 5 weeks old. You were having a plan and then you called your doctor after someone told you?
I did. I called her office and I was like, the wheels are coming off. Like, I need to come in and see her like today. And they were like, okay, let me talk to her. And they called me back and said, she'll see you at 4:45. And so I, got to her office and I remember like having a panic attack in the waiting room thinking, oh my God, they're going to take my baby. Like, I'm a monster. I can't believe I'm doing this. I should leave. And so I finally got called back and she came into the room and I just cried. I couldn't even speak. I just cried and cried and cried. And then she gave me a hug and said, you know, we would get through it. And that was really encouraging. But she ended up putting me on Zoloft and she referred me to a peer support group in the Portland area called Baby Blues Connection. And I can't, if anybody that's listening is in the Portland area, I cannot recommend Baby Blues Connection enough. I think for me, the peer support really enforced the idea that I wasn't alone. And it kind of builds a ladder out of that shame that you feel because you're supposed, you know, supposed to be the best time in your life. And how could you feel this way? And I think that when you're around other people that are also struggling, it really, I mean, you have no choice but to believe that you're not alone.
Oh, I'm so glad that you have. So Baby Blues Connection is peers. It's not like mental health professionals.
So it's facilitated by somebody with the organization. Sometimes they're mental health professionals. Sometimes they're just people who have been through it and have learned to facilitate the groups. But otherwise, it's all new moms, mostly moms. Sometimes they do have dads groups as well. But it's all people that are struggling either prior to their babies being born or after their babies being born. And so I actually made a couple of lasting friendships through that. So but it's really great. And I think it's an invaluable resource. It's hard, obviously, when you're depressed to like drag yourself out of the house and, yes, and go do these things. But I can't recommend it enough. If there's a similar organization, you know, wherever anybody lives, I can't recommend peer support enough.
And this is Portland, Oregon, I'm assuming?
Oh, yes. Portland, Oregon. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. Most people don't even think about Portland, Maine, but my best friend from college lives in Portland, Maine. So I always got to ask.
Yes, Portland, Oregon. Baby Blues Connection.
All right. Are they on Instagram? I must follow them. It's just hard for me to keep track of where every organization is. I'm always just so happy when there is one because not every city has it.
Yeah, definitely. No, I believe they are on Instagram. I believe so.
I'll get all the links and put it in the show notes. Don't worry.
Awesome.
Okay. So you got your doctor, you got on Zoloft. I don't want to like push you too far in personal questions, but whatever you're comfortable about in terms of like, did you end up seeing a psychiatrist or a therapist or, you know, how did your recovery go from there?
My recovery was, I would say like I progressed, but not quickly. I mean, it took a long time for me to have more good days than bad days. I did end up seeing a therapist for about 7 or 8 months until we ended up leaving the Portland area. And over that time, I sort of bonded more with Harlan and just sort of kind of crawled out of the darkness. It was not like I took Zoloft and I just magically felt better. It was a lot of work, a lot of counseling, a lot of going to those peer support groups, a lot of, you know, good days, bad days mixed together. And then also still kind of feeling guilty about the way that I had felt, yes, during that time. So, and then I guess maybe to fast forward a little bit, I ended up kind of having a hard time in mid-2016. So I just went back to do a couple of counseling sessions and I ended up being diagnosed with bipolar 2. And it turns out that women who have any form of bipolar disorder are at a much higher risk of having postpartum depression, anxiety, psychosis than women who don't have bipolar or women who don't have any mental health issues previously.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So wait, we got a lot to sort through.
Yeah.
So I think I kind of skipped over those first 5 weeks before you got help because we talked about you weren't sleeping, and that was sort of, you know, the trigger for like kicking off everything else. Where did what was going on those 5 weeks that got you to the point where you were telling people on Baby Center, like, I can't do this? Was it, were you feeling anxiety, depression, everything, you know the list of feelings?
Yeah, so I was kind of feeling a lot of tearfulness. I am not a crier. I am more so now that I'm a mom, but I've never been a big crier. But I was feeling tearfulness. I wasn't really able to eat. I had a lot of intrusive thoughts, rage. And then sort of as things got worse, I had a lot of thoughts about hurting myself and killing myself. And like I used to dream about or like make a plan to like leave and go somewhere else in the country and just start my life over so that my kid could have a better mom.
Right.
And that was kind of when I realized that things maybe weren't what they were supposed to be.
Okay. So then now let me figure out where the bipolar 2 fits in all this. When did you say that diagnosis happened?
That actually happened in November of 2016. So it was diagnosed after the fact.
Right.
Because I kind of I felt like I had recovered a little bit, and then I kind of got depressed again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sought some counseling services, and then my diagnosis sort of came out of that like a year and a half to 2 years after my son was born.
Okay, so a year and a half to two years. So here's where my miseducation comes in. I've always assumed that if you were bipolar, then that was the entire diagnosis. Can you be diagnosed as bipolar, but be like, but you also experienced postpartum depression?
I mean, because I was diagnosed after the fact, I mean, it wasn't really known
right
at the time that I had any like pre-existing like chronic condition. So I was diagnosed with postpartum depression. I mean, to be pedantic, the definition of postpartum depression is depression with an onset within 12 months of a child being born. Clinically, it's indistinguishable from regular depression outside right. of that. So I believe that you can still have both of those. I mean, it's basically a depressive episode that happens after your baby's born if you right. already are operating within the context of being bipolar.
Okay. Do you think it was your first depressive episode, or do you look back and you can see past episodes?
It absolutely was not. So I knew I was at a greater risk for maternal mood disorder because of my past mental health struggles, specifically depression. And I think honestly, that's what makes it so insidious, is just like, no matter how much knowledge you have or information that you've armed yourself with, like they still can seep in and get you, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I've talked to, I run a support group for moms peer to peer in Pasadena, and I've had a psychiatrist who came, I've had multiple mental health counselors come, and they all feel like embarrassed. Like, how did this happen to me? And it's just like, this thing is, it will get you like no matter what.
It doesn't care.
No, doesn't care. I mean, you have to educate, like knowing everything helped me really keep on top of it with my second child. But that still didn't change the fact, like, what my hormones did.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happens, so you went on Zoloft. Did they have to start you up off slowly to ramp you up?
They did. We started off at a relatively low dose, and kind of my doctor's office was calling me like once a week to just check in. And so we would occasionally increase the dose.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, I feel like that was really helpful.
Oh, your doctor just sounds like a saint.
She's a rock star. I really adore her. And I feel weird saying that, but I just, it's hard when you go through something so difficult in your life and you have so many like supportive people. It's hard to not just have a massive amount of like respect for them.
Yeah. And it's just like, I've met so many moms or talked to them where it's like, they get that dose and it's like, okay, we'll see you in 6 weeks. And like that's just too long to be suffering.
It really is. And I, you know, I wish there was a better way to catch it. My son's pediatrician does, it's all funny enough, he was in the same building as my OB, and they do a screening.
Mm-hmm.
They do the screening at a couple of different visits, but it's not even like at the first visit, it's at like 4 months and 6 months, I think they do the screening, and that's just too long. I mean, it's
right.
The wheels can come off so quickly, and I don't know, you know, what a better way is to address that, but it's, I feel like so many moms slip through the cracks. in that period of time.
Oh, yeah. This is why this is, I mean, when you say that this is your life's work, I'm just like, you know, amen, life's work, because it's like, it's such a high number. Like, you know, everyone comes up at you with like 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 7, like who cares? It's very common. And yet it's like 1 out of 3 moms are getting the help they need.
Yeah. And it's outrageous.
So what else other than the Zoloft, you were mentioning it wasn't just like the Zoloft being a magic pill. Like what was helping you with your recovery?
It was really therapy and the peer support, and my doctor had suggested a plan for making sure that I was getting sleep. And so my husband was really awesome and supportive. And I had, you know, my parents were able to help out kind of as needed. And, you know, honestly, my friends, it's so, like, having a newborn is isolating enough. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine if I wouldn't have had, even though they were, at the time, they were just my friends on the internet. We've since met up and it was awesome. But even though they were my friends on the internet, like I really don't know, you know, where I would be without them as well, because they, you know, they were always there odd hours of the night because they had babies too. And so there was always somebody awake to, you know, even just chat about mindless things to kind of just help pass the time.
You know, if you just need to get support, who cares how you get it?
Amen.
And so when do you think you started to actually, like, feel like yourself?
You know, that's such a funny question. In early 2016, I was feeling really good. And then I kind of, like I mentioned, I kind of had some depression and I went back to counseling. And since then, it's sort of been a slow crawl back to, like, who I want to be and who I know that I am. But now that my son is 3, things are going pretty well. I feel pretty good most of the time. So I think, honestly, I'm just now starting to feel more like my whole self again. Mm-hmm. I hope that isn't discouraging to anybody. Obviously I have some other factors in play, but I think 3 years later I can kind of say that I'm getting back to who I want to be and getting my wheels under me and feeling pretty good most of the time.
You know, I mean, for anyone who feels discouraged, I think motherhood knocks us all off track, regardless of what happens with your mental health. So
yes,
it's just, it's part of the roller coaster. Cause I remember reading in a blog post when like Pippa was like an itty bitty baby, how the mom, or maybe even I was pregnant, like, oh, I don't feel like I really got back to my life until my kid was 5. And I was like reading that. I was like, holy shit, like 5.
Yeah.
But now that she's almost 5, I mean, I can see how they are so consuming. And now she has friends. I mean, we'd get to preschool 5 minutes early today, and as soon as she sees her best friend, she's off. And like, there's so much more on autopilot. So like 3 is easier than a newborn, but it's like, I mean, 5 is like when they kind of are like a person with like, they've really like become a person.
Yeah. And I see that sort of emerging at 3, 3.5. My son, he's a laugh a minute. This kid is the funniest. And 3 is very challenging. I still prefer it to newborns. It turns out, not a baby person. And I did not really realize that until I had my own baby.
Not a baby person either.
They're just, for me, it was, there's just nothing rewarding about it. I guess to me, it's almost how I imagine some dads feel. You know, you hear these stories about dads who don't really feel connected to their babies until they're like more interactive. And that was kind of true for me too.
I think I'm more a baby person in retrospect. Like, I can sit with Pippa on my lap and go through a photo book with pictures from when she was a baby. And I can go, oh, look how tiny you were. But then I look at her and I'm like, you're so much better now.
Yeah. I think I do the exact same thing with Harlan. And he loves looking at pictures of himself as a baby. But 3 is a much more fun age for me, personally.
Yeah, I think, I could just have a whole, I think like once a month, at least at my peer support group, I try to mention, like, I don't like babies. And because I'll hold them for the moms who look like they really need a break. And
yeah,
I bounced them for a bit, but within a few minutes, I'm like, okay, kid, I, you know, why can't you sit? Like, I'm out of tricks.
Yes. I completely understand that feeling.
Yeah. So, and then I'll say it and everyone looks a little horrified. And then, you know, a few seconds pass and then someone's like, I don't like babies either. And it's always... Just keep going.
Sorry I interrupted you.
No, you can go. That was the end of it.
Well, it's really amazing how shocked people look, you know, when you admit things that are, you know, so taboo, I guess, when you're like, you know, I don't really like babies, or even sometimes when you're like, I don't really like being a mom that much, and they're like, oh, how could you say that? But I find that it really knocks down the wall and allows other people to, like, feel okay feeling that way, or even feel okay saying, you know, I feel that way too sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, oh God, I could spend so long deconstructing it. I mean, I just think, like we all have our calling. We all have some way to be our most authentic self. And, like, I'm a writer. I'm a creator. Like, I need to make things, but I'm also, like, a storyteller. That's, you know, so here I am doing the podcast. But I'm not going to be a doula. I'm not going to be a midwife. I'm not a baby person. But there are people, like, that is their God, like, God put them on this earth to be with the babies. And that is, like, yes, their calling. But the problem is, like, those people will say, I love babies. And that's, like, I mean, how can you go to the reverse and say, I hate babies? I mean, you know, you might as well say, I hate puppies. So, like, everyone, like, just starts to echo it because it sounds like a good thing. And it's like, no, there's someone at the, like, there's my Aunt Berta, who is magic with babies. They all love her. She loves all of them. She, you know, had 3 babies of her own. She ran, like, a daycare from home for a while. It's her thing. It's her magic. It's her superpower. But it's not my superpower.
Oh, that sounds like my idea of hell.
Oh my God, a daycare?
No.
At home? I can't even. Oh my God. Oh, yeah. That's like one of like the darker layers of hell too.
Yeah, definitely getting down there.
Mm-hmm. But there's people who are meant to do it. So, you know, God bless them. So, okay. So you're starting. Okay, we got on this track because we were talking about how you're starting to feel like your whole self, and we were worried about, you know, discouraging moms. But really, come on, doesn't matter if you have a mental illness. Those first 5 years are going to just be full of challenges.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, but then for those moms who are 1 or 2 years out and feeling like, man, I don't feel like myself, I guess I'm not going to ever feel like myself again. It's like, no, you will. That's the encouraging side of what you're saying.
Yeah, I think you definitely will. And I think between in the intervening time, you'll get peaks of her, you know, who you want to be and who you were and who you are still. I mean, you still are that person. It's just that there's just so your life has undergone this massive change. And, it, you know, when you're 1, 2 years into being a mom, you're still figuring things. I mean, you're always still figuring things out in a way. Like, by no means do I have all the answers at 3, but you'll get peaks of who that person is. And she's still there.
Right. Okay, so you were diagnosed with bipolar 2. Do you want to talk about that at all? Like, how that, for any moms out there who might be wondering, like, was my diagnosis the full story? Do you have any, like, insights on that, or?
I mean, I guess my biggest insight is, especially if you feel that you've struggled in the past, and you kind of have that, if you have that question about whether or not your diagnosis is the whole story, to trust your gut and pursue, even if you just do some therapy with a provider who's educated about bipolar and how it looks in women. I have some symptoms that I didn't realize were symptoms of bipolar. Sometimes, I get really angry, like white hot rage type of angry. And I did not realize that that's actually can be a sign of hypomania. And my doctor was very careful to clarify that with me. I said, you know, I feel rage sometimes. And she goes, do you mean you feel angry? And I said, no, I feel rage. Like, I'm articulate, I'm educated, and I can tell you that this is unlike an anger I've ever experienced. And so I think if you have questions about whether or not that is your whole story, then it probably isn't.
What does rage feel like? Do you like, is it like it hijacks you?
Yes, it's almost like an out of body experience. Like, you're so angry that you're just watching yourself. And I've never like done anything really regrettable because of my rage, but I just feel it's paralyzing because you just see red. It's really hard to describe if you've never felt it. Mm-hmm. But I know that there's some people out there that are going to be nodding their heads and be like, oh my God, yes, I get it. I totally understand what you're feeling. And that, you know, now that things are relatively well managed on medication, I don't feel that really as much. I mean, I definitely still get pissed off. I mean, I have a 3-year-old, but it's not this like white hot, uncontrollable you know, like overtaking feeling of just rage. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I just got beeps from my daughter's swim school calling. They always call like every week. Do you want a free lesson after your daughter's lesson? It's like, no, I don't. She's already exhausted.
Please leave me alone.
Please don't offer me a free lesson that's going to turn her into a vicious, awful, exhausted beast. Come on.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so that rage. And, you know, you had me thinking about, again, back to life's work. I mean, we have to, like, be spreading the story of what these experiences are like because they've just been silenced for too long. But also, you know, we have, like, you know, postpartum depression. Here's your diagnosis, and it's a spectrum illness, and here's the list of symptoms. I think we're just at the beginning of figuring this out, and we're just lumping a whole bunch of stuff together. And, like, I mean, maybe anger is part of postpartum depression. You know, that's what it is right now. But maybe, like, doctors should be asking, like, okay, anger, let's talk more about that. Is it rage? Is it anger? And to get to a diagnosis faster.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as I was kind of thinking about, like, what I knew about postpartum depression before my son was born. And so I knew, you know, I think I knew the standard signs: crying, difficulty bonding, loss of appetite, you know, insomnia, or wanting to sleep too much. But I didn't know that some of the others, depending on, like, what you read, basically can include feelings of, like, shame and inadequacy or irritability or anger. Right. And so I think sometimes people just get incomplete information about what postpartum depression looks like because it can look so different in different moms.
When did you feel the shame? Before you got help? After? Kind of all throughout?
I would say I kind of felt it all throughout. I remember at the time, I mean, I think it sort of compounded everything else I was feeling because I'm like, why do you feel like this? You shouldn't feel like this. This is supposed to be the happiest time in your life. Mm-hmm. You have this brand new baby. How could you feel this way? And I felt it more intensely, I think, after the fact, like as I sort of felt better, I was like, I can't believe that I felt that way. I can't believe that you wasted that time is really how I felt. And I don't feel that anymore because my journey is what it is. And I'm using it in a way that I think is important. But for a long time, I really did beat myself up over kind of how everything happened.
Right. I mean, and you're like, we're tilting into that. Like, so how did you, like, what do you think you've learned about yourself from all this? And, you know, you're calling it your journey, and here I am being really articulate, trying to get to a question, but, you know, you can cut me off whenever you want. Like, how do you feel like you grew as a person throughout all of this?
Well, I think the biggest thing is it made me more compassionate. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to hear stories, or, you know, occasionally you hear stories on the news because all you ever hear about postpartum depression is when it goes really badly.
Right.
But I would hear stories on the news about people who lost their lives or would hurt their kids. And I would just judge them so harshly. How could you do that to your child? Like, how could you do that? You're so selfish. How could you do that to yourself? And it's a lot harder to judge people that do those things when that was you. Like, there's not, I tell people, like, there's not a difference really between me and somebody who doesn't survive postpartum depression. Like, I am not a better person. I am not necessarily stronger or more resilient. I think there's an element of luck to it. And mm-hmm. I really think without my friends being like, you need to call your doctor, that could have just as easily been me. So it's impossible for me to look at people who lost their battles or hurt their kids and feel like any sense of superiority because I'm just not better than them. People die from this illness. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is it made me more compassionate. It also, I mean, I think it gave me a little bit of a sense of purpose. Like, the most important thing that came from it for me was that lives have been changed by me telling my story. I write a blog. And so I wrote kind of a 3-part series on what my journey was with postpartum depression. And I can't tell you, like, how many people have messaged me on Facebook or stopped me in the grocery store when I'm back in my hometown and said, you know, I thought I was the only person that felt this way. I'm so glad that you told your story. Like, I always felt so alone. And so, like I said earlier, talking about my experience is kind of how I redeem it. I'm on a team that nobody wants to be on. Like, I was drafted. I didn't have a choice. Right. You know, it's like you want to go play for the Patriots, but instead you end up in San Diego. You know, it's like, it's, you know, I didn't want to be on this team, but I am. And so I'm going to do my best to make sure that nobody else ends up on this team, or that if they are, that they know that they're not alone and there are a lot of us on this bench.
Yeah, I like that. It's, yeah, I did not in advance, well, before I got pregnant with Pippa, I was not like, oh my gosh, I hope I get drafted by Team PPD. But now that I'm here, it's like, okay, this is it. Like, I'm on this team. I've got to, like, make sure all my teammates are, you know, I don't think I can run with the analogy anymore. I'm sort of kicking it to death here, aren't I?
It's all right. And I apologize to any Chargers fans if my analogy was offensive.
This is a mom show. So if any of you, I mean, I don't want to get sexist here. I know a lot of mom, you know, women like football. But if you're going to get up in arms about this, I think my husband can direct you to a few other podcasts.
Yes, I think my husband could probably help. Although I will say one of my best friends is a very big Seahawks fan. And so I know that there are some women that are super into football. So I'm just saying, if you're a Chargers fan, both, I'm sorry and I'm sorry.
Okay, so can I ask you how...
You can ask me anything.
How is this on your husband? I have moms who will write me, and people are starting to mention in their interviews. It's a really tough part to address, like the experience on the husbands. But do you have any words on that?
I do, and I'm trying to be careful. I will say it was a rough time for us. My husband was as supportive as he could be at the time. And so, you know, like, we had developed a plan with my doctor, and it was basically he would get home from work, we would have dinner, and then I would sleep until midnight so that I could get like a good 4 or 5 hour stretch and then be on baby duty the rest of the night. And so... it definitely, I think, stressed him out to see me that way. I really wish that I could get him to write for my blog about what it was like for him from his perspective, because I think obviously the mom typically is the one that's suffering, but it really affects the whole family. And I know that I wish there was more support for dads who are supporting moms, or support for partners who are supporting moms who are having a really hard time, because it's not easy. I will say that my postpartum depression and sort of our experience is a large reason why we're not having another baby. Also because of my pregnancy being terrible and again, not being a baby person. There's a lot of reasons, but I think just what I kind of went through for the first 6 months after he was born, really shaped our family and sort of like how we look at things.
And, you know, it's okay to not have another baby. There are plenty of happy only children out there. There's a myth.
I'm not used to that response. I get a lot of really bizarre questions when I say that we're only having one child.
That's okay. There's a reason you get a lot of bizarre responses. And that's because people are stupid. And
I like you.
Okay, so these are the questions you're not allowed to ask a human being. And I have to sometimes, like, really restrain myself from telling people when I catch them asking. A mom who already has a baby, you are not allowed to ask, when are you having another baby? Because maybe she's not, or maybe she's trying and she's had, you know, 7 miscarriages. You don't know. So you're not allowed to ask that. Okay, a married couple that doesn't have babies, you're not allowed to ask them if they're having a baby. Again, you don't know if they're trying, or if they're having a fight about it, or if there's some bigger reason why they're not. A woman who is dating, you're not allowed to ask her, when are you getting married? Like she knows. You know, she would have told you already if she knew. And a woman who is single, oh my God. Like, the question, why don't you have a boyfriend, or when are you going to settle down already? Like, stupid, stupid questions. And I used to ask these questions all the time, and it took me, you know, to get to this point in my life. But yeah, those are the questions you're not allowed to ask a woman.
Oh, I have a friend that has 3 boys, and she never hears the end about when they're going to try to have a girl. And she's like, I already have 3 kids. My family, like, I love my kids. Why do I need a girl? You know, like, why is my family incomplete? Because I don't have a girl. So there's always questions, no matter where you are. People always have a nosy ass, disrespectful question to ask you.
Yeah, and people, it's like, I love meaningful connections and relationships that dive beyond small talk, but, like, people have this really amazing ability to ask offensive questions that are going to, like, trigger someone for weeks. Yeah. But then stick to small talk about weather and the commute. Like, can we, like, find a common ground here, folks? Like, some happy medium where we're meaningful, and you realize, if this person wants to talk about this, they're going to talk about it with me.
Yeah. Well, and it's, for me, it's one thing if, like, one of my good friends wants to, you know, ask me, like, why aren't you having another baby? Because I know that they're not just being a nosy Nancy about things. But when just people I don't talk to regularly or that I'm not close to or don't consider to be, like, if they're more of an acquaintance, I'm like, why are you asking me this? Like, why is this your business? I don't understand.
Yeah, we usually talk about, like, what brand string cheese do you buy? And now you're asking me when I'm going to have a baby? Come on, folks.
Exactly. Exactly.
Build the relationship and then let the person actually broach the subject.
Yeah. And then bad news for them, because I barely have the energy for people that I love in my life right now that I'm not about to take the string cheese relationship to the next level.
And, you know, and that's the, and I got sidetracked by telling everyone why people are stupid, but, you know, having one child, I always tell moms at my support group, that it's like, think about the people you know. And people, it's a whole myth that they've debunked that the only child is, like, poorly adjusted. They're doing great. They're probably doing better than the average. Think about how many people you know in your life who are bitches, assholes, you know, divas, whatever. Just go through the whole list. And how many of them have a sibling? Having a sibling does not save people from being horrible. So for any moms out there listening who feel guilty about only having one or only wanting one, God bless you. You're not doing anything wrong.
No, you're not doing one thing wrong. My son is so, he's so polite and he's very precocious and he's very outgoing. And I credit daycare for a lot of like helping with, you know, I guess those fears that you have about only having one kid, which are unfounded, but you know, he's getting social interaction and they will have friends and they like only children aren't this aren't these like weird aliens that are incapable of living fulfilling lives. Like,
oh my gosh,
they're
no.
just fine.
There are so many amazing only children in Pippa's class at preschool, and you would have no idea who is an only child and who isn't based on, like, they're all just wonderful. So
yes.
My advice is not have an only child and lock them in a closet and keep them away from human interaction. But you could have 10 children and lock them in a closet and you'd still have issues.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think the thing is, whatever somebody wants their family to be is what it should be. I don't see, you know, why you should have another child out of guilt or because you feel like you have to. Like, if you really want to have, you know, 5 kids, then I think that that's what you should do. But for us, our family is whole with 1 kid. And so that's what we're doing. And I encourage anybody who feels that way to not feel bad about it.
Yeah. Okay. Totally new topic. You mentioned that you would get sleep until midnight and then you were on. Were you breastfeeding?
So, I was trying like hell to breastfeed. He was born at 37 weeks, like I mentioned, because of the high blood pressure. So, it turns out that little boys who are born a little bit early are, what they call lazy eaters. And that was absolutely no exception for Harlan. And so we tried and tried and tried. We tried everything. We tried the supplemental nursing system. We tried nipple shields. We tried pumping before breastfeeding so he didn't have to wait to get to the letdown. And we tried all of these things and it just didn't work. So, you know, I attribute some of my issues to that, but I also, when I look back on it, think that hinging like so much of my worth as a parent on how I was feeding my baby was probably, you know, just compounding how shitty I felt about everything.
Right.
But so I ended up exclusively pumping for about 5 months. And then I just kind of, I think around the time that I really kind of started to feel, have more good days than bad days, I was like, you know what? I'm done. I can't do this. I would have to schedule my whole day around. Like, I would have to finish pumping. And then if I wanted to go out, I'd have to either take my pump with me or I'd have to go out and make sure I was back in time to pump again. And I just got kind of tired of it, you know, and it was, I think it was taking a big toll on my mental health to sort of feeling like all I did was pump and feed my baby. And so I ended up making the decision around 5 months to stop. And then we switched, he did formula until about a year. Obviously when we started solids, there was some of that, but, we did formula and looking back, I wish I would have switched to formula so much sooner. I feel like I bonded so much more with my baby when I wasn't like, why won't you eat? Like, why is this hard? Why can't we do this? Cause I feel like there's so much of the culture around infant feeding, like creates a lot of guilt for moms who either aren't able or don't want to breastfeed. And so it's made out to be sometimes this really magical, easy thing. And it's really not for everybody. Some people, you know, want to nurse for a long time and they have great success with it. And I think that that's awesome. And you know, felt at the time really devastated that that wasn't us. So I did not end up breastfeeding. To answer your question in a very long-winded way, no.
No, that's the answer that so many moms listening needed to hear.
Yeah, when people ask, and I always tell people that if I really wish looking back that I would have switched to formula like within the first month or two instead of waiting five and a half months, because I just felt, I just didn't have that resentment. I know that that feels silly that you can resent like your tiny baby, but I just resented so much that he wouldn't do it, you know, and it was just, you know, it was a combination of factors for why it didn't work, but I bonded so much more with him when I was done. And I encourage anybody who's just at that level of stress to really just consider even donor milk, formula, whatever that looks like, but it's not worth hinging your worth as a mother on how you're feeding your baby.
Oh yeah. Whoever came up with the phrase that breast milk is liquid gold. I don't want to wish them to death, but they probably should spend the rest of their life vacationing in Fresno and my apologies to anyone in Fresno. But it's just like, oh my gosh, like the amount of like emotional turmoil that has been created. Like, can we just like bring the pendulum back to the center, folks, and fed is best. And there's a book called Bottled Up that I lent to a friend, but it's so good. And it talks about how it's a mythology about how amazing breast milk is. And it's great if it works for you and if it's creating a bond. And there are some, you know, but the research has shown that, the only health benefit to the baby is fewer stomach aches, and that's only while they're being breastfed. I mean, I went into having Pippa, and I was like, I'm going to breastfeed, and it's going to be exclusive for at least 1 year, and then we are going to just wean whenever she's ready. And I went in with the attitude, this is going to prevent childhood cancer. And there's just no evidence for any of that. And I thought, oh, my baby's going to be super, super extra smart. And there's, like, no evidence really, but, like, the only evidence that there is suggests that formula-fed babies might have slightly higher IQs. So it's just – apparently, like, the White House had some report years ago, and they cited some study, but except it was, like, one of those fake studies, kind of like ADD and vaccinations, and it was actually, like, an invented study, and we are still trying to, like – explain to people like a vaccination does not give your child it's not ADD, it's autism, right? Like,
yes,
a vaccination is not going to make your child autistic. That's not what does it. It was a fake study, and the guy admitted it. And but it's like it hasn't been undone yet. We're it's going to probably be decades before people are like realizing that it was wrong.
Yeah, and you know that's what's it's really interesting is the peer reviewed solid research shows that when all other factors are adjusted for your family, your socioeconomic status, all of these things, that there's really not like a huge difference. There's not, in fact, there is no difference between formula feeding and breastfeeding long-term. Like, your kid is going to be three and he's still going to eat his boogers. Like, it's, you know, there's just not this huge difference. Like, I can't walk into my son's daycare and be like, this kid was breastfed or this kid was formula fed. And I think for me, it's about empowering women to make the choice that's best for their family. You know, some people, like I said, really enjoy breastfeeding and it works for them. And some of them have to work really hard at it. And I admire the hell out of those women. You know, I worked really hard at it and it didn't work for us. And I just think there's just so much shame around how you feed your baby. And it just feels so unnecessary. And I feel like it hurts so many women. And it's just, that hurts me. And I really wish at any point when I was struggling with breastfeeding that somebody would have been like, it's okay to stop. This is bullshit. Like, you don't need to feel this way. It's okay to just be done, you know, but no, when I posted, I remember I posted on Facebook, it comes up in my memories every year. Like, I really hate breastfeeding. And all I got were comments about like, did you try this? I can come help you. Like, did you try that? I know it's so hard. Stick with it. It's worth it. And while I know those comments were good meaning, I had one friend message me and be like, yeah, God, I hated it too. You know what I mean? And so it's okay to hate it. It's okay to love it. It's okay to do what works for your family. And I think that's what gets lost, I think, in all of this is every family is different and what every mom needs is different and what every family needs is different. And that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, for the moms listening, you're in the trenches, you have postpartum depression. I'm not telling you to quit or to keep going because some moms keep going is the thing that's the thing keeping her alive. So
absolutely.
It's like the thing that I've like been coming to in my like work and my journaling and all that is like how we've been robbed of our like feminine intuition, and we're not just like allowed to be mothers anymore. We're supposed to have like a shelf full of parenting books, and we're supposed to be consulting all of these experts, and we're supposed to go to like, you know, consult the Hive online. Like, you know, don't like make a major decision without asking Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And like, no, something like breastfeeding, a mom should be able to be like, okay, what's right? And then just listen to herself, like listen to that answer that comes from your gut, because that's probably the right answer.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not agree more with that sentiment.
Okay. So we have talked about a lot today. Is there something I'm missing?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I think we hit on a lot, and like, I know I'm not going to be able to post this interview for a few weeks, and to my listeners, I apologize, because like I already know moms who need to hear this interview.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's hard being on this team that nobody ever really wants to be on or dreams of being on, but it's important that those of us on the team who can do share our stories, because there are moms who need to hear it, and there are new parents who need to hear it, and just like one of the things that I wrote, like advice for moms who are struggling today. And it's like, first of all, I'm so sorry that you're going through this. Call your doctor, tell your friends, lean in. And I hate saying this, but it does get better. Do not be ashamed. You matter, and you are a good mom, and you are enough. Like, you are killing it. You do not feel like it right now, but I promise you are doing a good job.
Yeah, you will look back and you will see photos of you holding your baby, and you will see how much you love your baby, and you'll see that your baby loves you, and you will see, it is hard to see when you're in the trenches, like that the diaper changing and the snuggling, it's really hard to see how important that is. But when you get a little further out, you'll actually be able to like recognize your worth.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm going to put in the show notes links to your blog posts, but do you want to give a shout out to your blog now so listeners can go find you?
Oh, sure. So it's themothersideblog.com. And I'm not as diligent about writing lately as I should be, but I'm working on getting back to it. So I'm excited about that. And I'm excited about some things I've got in the works that I'm writing about. So.
And there's no should. You just write when you can. You're a mom.
Yeah.
You got your and you've been managing a bipolar diagnosis, for God's sakes. You're doing enough.
I know. Writing is really like having a total blank. It's really fulfilling for me. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that I kind of do for self-care. And so that's why I say that I should. It's because it's a thing that's actually really good for me, but I don't always make the time that I should to do the things that are rewarding to me. So
what are, okay. I always try to remember to ask people what they're doing for self-care. What has been working for you? Writing?
So self-care, I get ready for an answer here. So I think a lot of people think self-care is just bath bombs and lotions and mani-pedis, and I think that that's part of it. And actually, that's the part of self-care that I'm really bad at. But for me, self-care looks like going to therapy. I make sure that I make and keep my medication management appointments. I make sure that I make time to socialize even when I don't feel like it, because I'm an extrovert and I need to be around people and interact with people because it just feeds my soul even when I'm tired. But I also try to do things like get pedicures. I do try to do things like write, because I find that that's very fulfilling for me. And so, I mean, my self-care, like I said, I'm good at the hard self-care. I'm good at the nitty-gritty things you don't want to do but are actually self-care. And I'm not always very good at the things that people think of when they think of self-care.
I love that response. And I love that, I mean, writing is my biggest self-care. And it's so much my self-care that I have to sort of temper how I talk about it, because I try to be really like open-minded, and we're all different people and we're all wired differently. So what works for me doesn't necessarily work for you, but writing works so well for me that I just want to like give everyone a journal and a pen and be like, write, just write every day.
I feel the exact same way. I've recently taken up bullet journaling, which has been really great, which is not necessarily writing, but it's a nice way for me to kind of just like dump out like snippets of my thoughts on any given day. And I've found that that's really helpful and has kind of helped me get back into writing more like longer pieces.
I'm actually interviewing a mom in 2 days who is into bullet journaling. And I think her interview will air the week after you. So we'll have more on bullet journaling. Oh my gosh, I love writing so much and journaling.
Yes, it's a lot of fun. I've got my bullet journal and I've got my regular journal and I've got my blog. I love writing. And I'm excited. You can tell I'm excited because now I'm talking really fast, like I told you that I would. but I'm excited to get back to writing and just as a means to sort of fulfill myself and continue sharing my story and sharing the stories of other moms and sharing the things that need to be shared, because sometimes the just current culture and like the environment and motherhood is, like we talked about, just really toxic and it doesn't need to be. Like, you know, it's okay to just make the choice that's best for your family. It's okay.
Yeah, and it's okay for anyone listening who is a writer and who's forgotten that. Like, don't feel bad for forgetting. I completely forgot about writing when I had postpartum depression and I was in the hospital, finally my medication working, and going, oh my God, I should get a pen and paper. I should be writing. Like, it completely left my mind. It is so crazy what depression, anxiety, hormones, like, will do to you and motherhood.
Yeah, absolutely. You just reminded me that I didn't take my medication this morning, so thanks for that.
I'm finally off Zoloft. It's been about, I don't know, 7-8 weeks now. And it is so amazing that I don't have to, like, check the pills every day.
Oh, see, it's been a process for me, but just recently I'm really okay with the fact that because bipolar is a lifelong condition, that I'll probably be on some form of medication for the rest of my life. And it's, I'm really okay with it now. I know for a lot of people, in fact, there's a bipolar magazine that comes out quarterly, and the most recent issue talked about like adherence to medication plans and about why finding that and getting patients to stick with their meds is so difficult. And it was a really illuminating read as somebody who just recently sort of accepted that's my life and that's how I'm healthy. So I thought that was interesting and well-timed.
I love that there's a bipolar magazine, and every couple of months, like, I don't do enough, but every couple of months I'm like, there needs to be a postpartum depression magazine.
Yeah.
And it can be a quarterly, it could be online only, but someone out there listening, can you just start this? Like, it can be really crappy at first, like those dittoed newsletters we used to get in, like, second grade to bring home. But I just need there to be something other than those, like, free magazines you get at your obstetrician's office that are, like, glossy pictures and, like, the 10 must items for your baby shower list. Like, no. Let's talk about mom.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Well, Sam, I loved having you on the show today.
It's been great talking to you. It's really nice to, I mean, I don't know if nice is the right word, but it's really gratifying to be able to share my story and know that other moms are gonna hear it and hopefully feel better and feel a little bit more empowered because of it.
I think the sharing is just one of the most, I think, you know, I try to not say, like, this is what you absolutely have to do to recover, but I think sharing really is one of the things you have to do. You have to sleep, you have to get your water, you have to get your nutrition, and you got to share.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Courtney. I appreciate it.
So that's it for this week. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Sam, and sharing your story. I know it's going to help so many listeners. When we were finished talking, and I turned off the recording, Sam and I, you know, kept talking and discovered that we're both members of the Self-Care Squad on Facebook. I know I have mentioned that before, and Graham Seabrook, who runs the Self-Care Squad, was a guest about a year ago. So, and I know some of you have joined the Self-Care Squad after hearing about it on the podcast, and it just bears mentioning again. So I just love finding these connections. We had no idea that we were both members of the squad. The links for the squad and other things like Sam's blog and her Instagram handle, you can find over on the show notes at ppdadventures.com. For those of you who are listening in real time, it's February 2018. I'm scheduling another round of interviews right now for April and May 2018, just to get all the interviews done for the lovely summer months. I like to get as many stories out there because I really believe in the power of our stories, and I still have my own story and my own journeys to share with you. I feel like the postpartum piece of my journey is over. The advocacy is not, and the awareness raising, but my own personal adventures with hormones and just being a woman they're not going to end until the day I die. And I have more updates to give you, but like I said at the beginning of the episode, I've got a cold. No one wants to listen to me sneezing and snuffling and sniffling away, but it is day 11 of my cycle, and this is my second day doing progesterone cream, and I'm very hopeful for some other changes I've made to my diet and exercise routine, and I'm cutting caffeine, so I'm doing a lot of stuff, and I'm hopeful that if not this cycle, maybe in the next cycle or two, I'll get a real handle on the PMS that I was experiencing in like December and January. And I'll do an episode really soon to kind of give you all the information I gathered on that front and what I'm doing and how it's helping me, or what's not working for me. I hope it all works. I think it is. I have really good feelings, and I've got lots of good feelings for you. I'm glad you found the show. And you know, if you ever feel inspired to, I'd love it if you left a review, like over on iTunes. Did you know that iTunes has made it so that you can now actually leave a review for the podcast on your phone? You can, if you're listening in the iTunes app, I think you just scroll to the bottom and there's like an easy way to just like hit a button and write a quick review. And the more reviews, the more, I don't know how Apple works, but I understand that it's easier for people to find the podcast if reviews are being left. So, you know, a great little bit of advocacy you could do, leave a review, and maybe that'll help some other mom find the show who needs it. Postpartum depression and all maternal mood disorders can feel incredibly lonely and isolating, but you are not alone. You did not do anything wrong to bring this upon yourself. With, you know, with proper support and medical help, you can and will make a full recovery. I love you, and I hope you have a great week.